Hey, everybody. Good afternoon or good morning, depending on where you're sitting. Welcome. Thanks for joining us. My name's Mike Gibb. I run AccountsRecovery.net, and I'm really excited to be hosting on video for the first time today's webinar on going digital and doing it right, from emails to re-engaging. This is the sixth and final webinar in a six-part series titled Digitizing Your Collections, which has been sponsored by Revenly. Today, we've got Josh Allen from Revenly and Tim Collins from True Accord and myself here to host a video broadcast offering participants the chance to ask the panel anything they want in three critical areas: the omni-channel payment, if inbound calls are money, what are inbound text and emails, and web chat. Before we get into our questions, let me tell you a little bit about today's speakers. Josh Allen is the CEO and founder of Revenly and is an advocate for digital change in the credit collection industry. He has dedicated his time to solving the problems that the complexity of the collections industry faces in order to make digital transformation easier. He also loves cars, the 49ers, his daughter, and on occasion, his two dogs. Tim Collins is the Chief Compliance Officer at True Accord. Prior to joining True Accord, Tim worked at Convergent as its General Counsel and Chief Ethics and Compliance Officer. He has more than 20 years of experience in the accounts receivable management industry, including firsthand experience in litigating cases. He was on the ACA International Federal Affairs Committee, or may still be. Are you still on the committee?
I am currently chairman.
Chairman of the committee, there you go. And is a past chair of the ACA International MAP Committee. Is an interactive Q&A session with Josh, Tim, and myself. Your questions are not only encouraged, but are actually pretty critical to the success of the event. To submit a question, please enter it into the Q&A tab on your Zoom webinar control panel. This event is being recorded, and a recording will be made available in the coming days on accountsrecovery.net. With that, as we wait for the hopefully onslaught of questions to come in, let me get the ball rolling. Josh, Tim, let me ask you first, what are some reasons to look at digital solutions? And Josh, since you're the sponsor, we'll give you the honor of answering first.
You know what? Can you guys hear me? I'm just using all of my channels to talk. Tim, you got yours?
I got here. I can hear you loud and clear.
Okay, I'm going to actually pass this one to Tim, because he actually had a really good one, I think, for what's going on in the world. Tim, do you want to take it away? It's the pandemic being a good example, and actually what we're doing right now as an example of things.
Yeah, absolutely. So video conferencing is obviously booming right now. There's a lot of people that are working from home. But for collection agencies, really, digitalization has been one of those things that's been slow in coming, I would say. A lot of the digitalization we've seen has been, you know, there's websites with web portals, but that's not really where people are taking their payments. You know, they're still relying a lot of times on the collectors to be able to make those payments and take those payments. And when you have a pandemic situation like we're going through now, there's definitely a chance that could be impacted. It's one of the things that, not that we took in a pandemic, but we really were more consumer focused, and consumers were looking to more self-serve. So we built a True Accord program around that ability to self-serve, such to a point that about 96% of all of our payments come through our web portal. And that's what digitalization can do for you. So at times like this, having a very robust IVR process, having a very robust website, there could be web chat, those other apps options that are out there. Those are the kind of things that can help you kind of go through some of these waves and storms, if you will, as they come up. But I think one of the key things, and I appreciate Mike for having me on today, and then definitely Josh for sponsoring this, is really what Revenly's done in this space. So especially as it relates to payment processing. So Josh, if you would talk a little bit about that and kind of the holistic approach that you guys have taken, I think that'll give folks on in the presentation an idea of some of the things that they should be thinking about or could think about as it relates to web portals and web payments.
Yeah, of course. So when we take a look at this, there's a few things that we look at, and I think it would help to almost define You know, there's digital transformation, which a lot of the collection and credit industry and world is embarking on. And then you hear a lot of things that are digital first. So digital first, just to, you know, kind of branch out into that for a second, is what Revenly is. You know, it's also what like TrueAccord is. It's the companies that are founded on thinking on being built with digital platforms first, like Zoom, which we're all on. So the adoption rate right now of Zoom for the people of this meeting is amazing. So Zoom is a digital first company. So everything, I guess, in our line of thinking is digital first, and then, you know, everything else second. So some of the things that we do is that I think we found is a little bit different than, I guess, the normal day-to-day business that we've tried to help clients with and just generally anyone, is that tracking different channel like analytics and business insights is always an important place to start. I think a lot of collection agencies know their call volumes and how many letters they're sending out, but they don't know how many emails they're collecting online. They don't know how much traffic that they get from online, right? And again, to play off this, the current atmosphere, both economical and just global, I guess, concern in general, you know, it's an interesting thing, because one of the things I would almost want to know, okay, how many, if I have to send a couple people home and people are going to self-serve, right? And so I'm going to take a small dip in some of my payments out of concern. How many people are going to like my website actually paying? How many are leaving and not paying, and what are the things there? And I guess Mike actually gave me something a while ago, the best thing, like, can I do it with one hand? Which I still use, Mike, so thank you very much for that. But I think for the collection agency world, those are very simple things that are often overlooked. And so I guess I would say that to start that digital transformation process, you actually have to start thinking digital first. What if we were a digital only company and the website was the only thing that we had, right? That was it. What if that was all we had? There you go.
Yeah, that's a great way to frame it. I mean, if you started with just that perspective, what would that mean? I think, you know, from a consumer perspective, consumers are now demanding it. You know, they are asking for it by their actions, right? So they're no longer answering the phone. They're blocking phone calls. They're doing that stuff. They're trying to self-serve. They want these other channels, email, SMS, web chat, and those kind of things. So I think if you thought about it, if you did that thought exercise, like you just mentioned, Josh, and you said, look, if we only had the website, what would we do? And we may be facing that situation. Then what does that look like? And then how can you meet those consumer demands? And the web's not the only way. There's IVR that's out there. We're seeing a lot of, there's another company called Interactions, which I'm sure most of our people are on board with. Interactions does a great job where it's trying to communicate back and forth based upon consumer engagement. We're seeing more and more of that. Google came out with something called Duplex, which was that somebody was actually, they had their Google assistant set up a hair appointment for them. It worked fairly well. And so I think we'll start to see more and more of that stuff. But I think, Josh, if I could just bring you back before we get on to some of the other questions that are out there. When you think about website from a holistic approach, you know, and you're mainly focused on the payment processing, right? How do you think about, you know, consent capture, notification, those kind of things? If you could talk about those elements, not just, you know, hey, we can take a payment, but what else can you be doing while you have somebody who's an extremely engaged consumer? You know, that is somebody who wants to pay.
Right. Okay. Yeah. That's a good, a very good question. So obviously in collections, the name of the game is to collect. So to end with a payment page or a response that says successful payment. I mean, preferably, you know, paid in full. However, there's always a journey, right? A customer journey, which is kind of a cliche. Whether that's when an outbound call, an inbound call, you know, from a letter or online. So how we think about it is making it as frictionless as possible, whichever channel that that person decides to travel through. And so, as you're saying, consent, which again is a great thing, because I know, I'm sure you get a lot of questions from colleagues that say, oh, how do we email? How do we send text? How do we do this? How do we do this? Well, again, a great place to start is start with what's right in front of you and what's very easy to do, which is everybody going online right now, right? I know a lot of companies right now are asking, well, can I get your email over the phone to send you this? Can I get, would you mind opting into SMS? That's a perfect way to do it if you know, your compliance and attorneys say it's a perfect way to do it, but that's a good way to do it. The other way is self-serve opt-in, right? The lowest of all the overhead and all, some of the lowest hanging fruit, which is if I'm going online to pay something and I'm traveling, I'm intent on getting to that checkout screen. Asking questions along the way, again, in a frictionless process, so you have to be very smooth with it all, because you don't want to pop up throwing someone off and them getting annoyed. But a frictionless process of saying, okay, is this a mobile number or a home number? It's a mobile number. Great, mobile number. Would you like to get an SMS? Yes, I would. And opt them into SMS. Tim, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think if a debtor went to a website and said, opt me into SMS, I would want you to text me these alerts, and opted in on their own, that a collection agency really has much concern to then text them, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah,
no, it's a great way to show. I mean, to be able to walk into court, obviously you want the right disclosures and they'd understand, and you're going to follow the general rules of texting, which is if they text you back a stop, you're going to stop and those kind of things. But yeah, I think having that consent from that consumer and given to your agencies is a great place to start from a risk and liability perspective. So
I'm going to, here our first question. And so we'll use this as an opportunity to remind everybody, if you have a question for Tim or Josh, type it into the Q&A button, or hit the Q&A button and type it in and submit it, and we'll ask it. That first question is, what are the best ways to use these technologies like email, chat, SMS, and avoid legal risk, i.e. not get sued?
Right. Well, anybody who's been in this space knows that anything you do is going to get you sued. And it seems the more consumer focused we are, I mean, like, we've done some things like taking the requirement of in writing out, you know, and in like our 1692G notices, because we were processing that. And what did we get rewarded for that? We got class action lawsuits. So everybody had to put that back in. So Tom, great question. It's we can't prevent litigation. We can reduce it. We're always going to get sued by someone. We even see it at True Accord. We're sending, you know, 20 million emails a month communicating with consumers, mainly with the way that we believe that they want to be communicated with. And we occasionally get those lawsuits in that talk about, you know, current creditor versus original creditor or interest and breakout. So, but some of the things that you could really do is look at it from a risk perspective, right? So if you're going to do text messaging, which is where a lot of people are going, we could talk a lot about text messaging today. If you're going to do text messaging, look at the buckets that you actually have. It's not just consumers. You have consumers from various clients. And if you talk to a client and said, hey, tell me about your revocation process, you know, for, you know, TCPA. And they say, what are you talking about? You're probably going to want to put them in a higher risk bucket, right? Because they're not capturing revocations. And, but if you, you know, to Josh's point, if you're capturing consent yourself through one of the various channels, through your agents, through online, self-serve, or they have a short code that they're texting you, whatever you're doing, that's probably your safest bet, because you've actually been able to capture that consent. So capturing consent for SMS, crucial, especially because of the TCPA. We're going to see a lot of exposure there. But looking at those risk buckets, so probably the first risk bucket I would put up there is consent to you guys. Anybody who's paying you, highly motivated consumer, great opportunity to capture consent. So start there. It's a great place to start with all of these programs. Email them, you know, ask them to put their email note, you know, so they can get, so many consumers today are used to getting notices electronically. And if you ask them for it, they'll check that box, they'll type in their email address, and you can send that off. Again, be careful of friction. And you can always reach out to Josh anytime to talk about making sure it's not so much friction that it's not going to happen. But Then the next box down is those clients that really have good terms and, you know, and capture terms of service and terms of that capture that SMS consent and how it can be used and sharing with third parties. And they have a revocation program, you know, so, and they want codes being sent back when it's been, you know, revoked. And then you kind of have that third bucket that probably has good terms and conditions, but doesn't do anything with revocation. You're going to have some exposure there. And then finally, it's the ones that just don't care. So if you were to seek, hey, if I was your general counsel or chief compliance officer, I'd want to start with those upper buckets where we could reduce our risk, figure out what our program is, and then scale from there. Also, just one of the things to think about is to minimize their use. TCPA has exposure, obviously, for every time you use it. One time can give you exposure. So having that limitation and those kind of factors in there are important as it relates to email and, with the SMS, email and all those other ones. But if that risk approach is really the way that I would look at it and talk with your teams internally about risk. So great question. Thank you for that.
Tim, we're going to make a great team if during the rest of this webinar, because I have a different answer that's complimentary to yours. I'm not an attorney, so I can't tell you how not to get sued. I'll just say that one straight out. But I'm not also going to lead you there. But what Tim said was actually was spot on. I would take it one step further, and you take your SMS and you take your email, right, and even chat to an extent, but SMS and email more. You have different categories. You have alerts, just regular payment alerts. Okay. And then you have your two-way customer service. I'd like to check on this. And so right there you have almost that again, you take your risk buckets and you can split them. Is this person, you know, signed up for alerts? Well, if someone signed up for auto payment reminder alerts, they're not someone that you're going to blast text and say, hey, come over here and pay, or even do a two-way text with, unless they text first and say, like, you know, I have a problem, I can't pay my next payment, right? So I think when you're drawing out your strategy for SMS and chat and email, put it on a big whiteboard and say, okay, how many different situations are we going to face? Like, payment alerts is the easy one. I mean, those can be automated. When it comes to two-way, what, you know, are you going to be kicking someone over into something else or just removing them from a list? And I think having the right vendors in place and the right resources, like, you don't want to just go open up a Gmail account and copy and paste a bunch of emails in there and hit send. Mm-hmm. I would say that would be the way not to do it. So you do want to draw out a strategy. Again, that the deeper you go into that, the more effective, I guess, and less risky it will be.
Yeah, great points.
Excellent. Well, we've got another question that has come in, so I will ask that and remind everybody again, if you have a question, talking SMS, chat, text, consents, anything you want to talk about, what's in the background on Josh and Tim's office. Happy, I'm sure they'll go through that too. But our next question is, in your view, and by your definition, how deep has digital penetrated the debt collection industry? 10%, 50%, 70%? Alternatively, how big of an opportunity do you believe this is for us collectively?
Yeah, Josh, I mean, you see it on the front line, right? Because you're out there. I mean, what is your thought process just when, you know, talking with clients, potential clients? What are you seeing there?
How deep has the digital penetration penetrated the debt? So less than 10% I'll use an example or a conversation I had. So I talked to a company that's in the e-commerce space. You know, they're a service company. They do marketing automation. And they have all these tools built out for e-commerce to help sell you a t-shirt or, I don't know, like a phone from the channel, from the days of old, like Tim's phone there. They basically, during our discussion, they kind of said, hey, yeah, it sounds like the industry would only use maybe 5% of what we offer because they're just not ready for the other 95%. It's like they haven't even, you know, kind of stuck their foot in the water. So I'd say digital penetration is very it's still new, like, which is a good thing, because that means there's a huge, like, you got a lot of playing field to run with. There's like a lot of growth. Obviously, you got to, there's steps to take to get there, but there's a lot of room to explore that path. And how big of an opportunity? I mean, Tim, this is yours. I think True Accord is a living and breathing example of the opportunity that there is.
Yeah, you know, I think you're 10% probably for most, but we have to step back and take a look at the industry, right? Highly regulated, highly litigated. That makes you risk averse over time. And when you've been doing something successfully for the last 50 years, calling consumers and collecting, it's very difficult to move away from that, right? Kodak saw that. They made so much money off of film. They didn't want to move away from film. They invented the digital camera, right? Years before. They stayed in business all the way up until the patent expired. And then nobody had to pay them royalties anymore. And I think that's part of that inertia that happens. And we've had that as an industry. Very successful collection agencies have done well, been profitable. That's been compressed, obviously, with additional compliance stuff, but have done well. And now we're starting to see this shift, and the investment in technology probably hasn't been there because of a fear of and the risk. I mean, why would you email consumers when no one else was emailing consumers? And or looking at SMS and text messaging and those factors. So I think it is our greatest opportunity. And it's going to be those agencies that are going to be willing to take a little bit more risk, right, and start to try some of these things, knowing that there's going to be some exposure there, as we talked about in Tom's first question, right? But willing to take those risks and go meet consumers where they want to be met. Those are going to be the agencies that we're going to see doing very well 3, 5, 10 years from now, because technology is just changing faster and faster, and we're way behind as an industry. So, but I think that's our greatest opportunity. But there's a lot of hurdles you have to get over to do that. And it's not just, you know, it's not just technology. You know, we've seen it before. Whenever you've done a technological project, there's always these things that there's the technology itself, right? You've got the processes that go along with that technology. But the key piece that most people miss are the people. You know, whether it's leadership believing that this is the way you go, whether it's your legal and compliance, being able to find out if they can, how do we take on that additional risk and mitigate that risk or transfer that risk or eliminate some of those risks. And all of those things have to come together. And it's very difficult to do when you've been in this industry that's always done it this one way. So it's a great time to be in the industry though. So
yes, Mike. The questions are flying in now. So we've got plenty of them to deal with here. Our next question, which I'm sure is on the minds of probably many people watching, listening, and those who aren't, but probably should be, what would be your recommendation for entering this new era of the digital collection area when you have been doing the same collection practice for the past 30 years?
So that's a great question, because that's the majority of the industry, at least you know, from my limited experience. I think if from my perspective, in working with companies, a lot of it comes down to the people. Who is going to own that process? And then once that process is understood by that person, are they sharing that job focus with another job that they have? Or is there somebody else who's going to be solely focused on that? And essentially, are you taking that 30 years and trying to force that 30 years of experience to change? Or are you leaving that as is, right? Don't break or don't try to fix what's not broken. And are you taking that process and aligning it with it, but you know, building out on its own kind of branch? So I think what a lot of it comes down to is the people. You have to have buy-in. You have to have like a group think, and you have to have group buy-in. And Tim, I know your notes from yesterday, it was on there kind of about that. If I can find it quickly. Yeah. So you buy in from all the stakeholders and an executive champion. But from my perspective, I see a lot of that. And I think that it takes a person to invest fully in it. It's not just a nonchalant, let's go sign up for email and start emailing. It takes a little bit more than that.
Yeah. And you've got to be able to build this momentum. We've seen it in sports all the time. The team that's out there winning, they come out and then all of a sudden something happens and they've lost that momentum. You have to do the same with your technological change. It's like pick something and get your executive buy-in, get your requirements, get that executive champion who's going to be able to do it, get the resources and drive it. But don't start with trying to go from zero to 100% digital. Pick something that you think you could do very, very well, whether that's even some business analytics or pick a partner that can really help you with that. If you've never done SMS before and you're looking to be able to do something, you want to start off with the least riskiest thing that you can do, then sign up with somebody like Revenly, right? Who's got that process built in into a pretty frictionless way of capturing consent as they're going through that payment channel. And now you started to build some folks. They've got text messages to go out as reminders. And now you can tell your clients, yeah, we're text messaging. And it's in the very least risky bucket piece. I will say, just to come back, because somebody posted in the chat, it's actually Sheila Monroe, our CEO of True Accord. She makes a great point that one of our largest clients out there, their goal is to get the industry to be 20% digital in 2020. And so that really tells you we have a long way to go in a very short period of time if they're trying to get to 20%. Because if you think what digital is, maybe that's a great question. If you think about what digital is, it's I look at it as consumer-driven, consumer-focused, self-serve, and that could be easily just around your payments, right? And we looked at, as I mentioned at the beginning, we're 96% of our payments are done online by consumers themselves. I would say that that's very digital, which is not typical. I think some of the agencies I talk to, when they start talking to me about SMS and emailing, the first question I ask them is, well, I'm pretty sure your website's TCPA compliant. And they look at me like, what do you mean? I'm like, you don't have to worry about the TCPA on the website. Does your website have the ability to take payments? How many payments are you taking on your website? Is it frictionless? So go there to those lower risk stuff and start to think about this whole thing differently. Josh did a great job, I think, at the beginning. He said, like, you started off and just said, I'm going to be doing this just digitally without a lot of human intervention. What would that look like? And that will give you the framework and the mental model that you're going to want to have as you start to go down this path. So
we've gotten a number of questions that I'll sort of classify or related to text messaging that are kind of related. So I'm going to see if we can't maybe get through some of these in bulk. If your first communication to a consumer is a text, is that text a request for consent? If so, what is the percentage that will opt in?
Wow, great question. I'm not sure we're going to find that data in our industry. We're going to have to go outside of that data. And some people are going to say to you that probably your first text shouldn't be your consent text.
Probably.
From a risk perspective. Some people are going to say, well, if we use a manual process, only text you once. Yeah, those are risk mitigation. But it's not going to get you to, what Tom was talking about earlier about how do you do it without getting sued. And I'd really want to be in the very, very conservative bucket. I'd want to do things like scrub for phone ownership. I'd want to run it through Web Recon. Web Recon's got 70,000 phone numbers of litigants, including TCPA. You could scrub up against that. I mean, there's all these things that you could do to say, okay, now this is the batch that we think that we should text. And this is what that group should look like. But I wouldn't necessarily come out of the gate, but let's say you're going to come out of the gate with that piece. If you're consumer focused, you're going to want to try to, some people don't want to chat. So you're going to make it easy for them to say, no, that's really the stop process. But if you're going to go down that path, I would be trying to capture consent with that first text. So,
all right,
not my choice though.
Yeah. If a client has consent, does that cover third party collectors for the most part legally?
Wow, there's far better lawyers that are listening in here right now that I'm sure are just saying,
I find that hard to believe.
Don't answer that question. It really it's going to come down to jurisdictions that you're in, terms and services, you know, that are listed actually inside that creditor agreement. How strong is a revocation program? So coming up with kind of that checklist of questions that you want to do, it will really help you. And I think it's enough in this space, especially for consumers that want to be texted. So short answer
question, which I think is pretty interesting and I had never really thought of before. Since, you know, there are courts out there that have said a text is defined as a call under the TCPA, if a text includes a hyperlink, does the text still fit under the definition of a call? And I guess my question is, what happens if someone clicks on that link and goes to a website? Is that still covered under the TCPA then because it originated from a call?
I don't know, but I'm pretty sure, Mike, that there's a judge somewhere who's going to say, yep, you clicked on that link and your website was not TCPA compliant.
Maybe I've opened a new door for plaintiffs, the lawyers.
Right. This could be the next spaghetti on the wall. Let's see what sticks. I think anytime you send a text, it's going to be covered by the TCPA.
Okay.
Right. And so, and this will get flushed out more and more when the FCC talks about the ATDS. We've got the TRACED Act that's come out. We've got all these things that are happening as it relates. But I think you send a text, it doesn't matter if it has a hyperlink in it, if it's got a JPEG with their, 1692G, that validation notice in there. I don't think it matters. Do you know what? There's a whole generation out there that communicates with emojis and those. So you're going to have to figure out, does this emoji mean stop texting me or cease and desist, or am I disputing your account? But luckily there's a solution for that. There's a company out there called TCP.ai that will actually scrub every inbound text message that you get to determine if they're asking to stop or cease and desist. And so,
really?
Yeah, technology is filling the gap as we're moving into those spaces.
All right, Josh, we've got a question for you. Following up on the penetration rate we were discussing before, in 3 or 5 years' time, what percentage of collections do you envision coming from a self-service channel, that is, without a conversation with a live call center agent? How do you see that number progressing?
So if we're talking about revenue and like volume, I've seen a number, and I'm sure someone else is going to say, no, that's not it. You're off by 100 basis points. But I've seen a 13 to 15% of collections right now is done online. I'm just gonna say online, not through like an IVR. I'm not sure, but I know the IVR aspect is very is lower. An automated IVR is lower than online. So let's say 15% of your collections is done online. There was a survey that the U.S. population of bill paying adults, 85% of them would prefer to pay through a mobile phone or through a computer, like, right? Just on their own, pay any of their bills, not collections. So I think in the 3 to 5 years, well over 50% of revenue should be done fairly automated. And I mean, that'd be crazy. We know one agency now, TrueCord is one who's doing almost 100% of their revenue online, and most of that process automated. I know another agency down in Florida who over 50% of their collections is done online. And they're, you know, they're medium sized agency. So I think that, that 3 to 5 mark, most of your revenue can be pretty much brought in digitally, and by digitally, self-serve.
Yeah. And I would agree with that. I think we're going to see this fundamental shift. I mean, Josh and I have talked about in the past, your most profitable payment doesn't come in when you have an agent involved, right? Because that agent you have their salary, benefits, you've got overhead for building, computers, insurance, all that stuff that goes into that. Where if a consumer can self-serve, you'll see that. I would say that the agencies that are going to be around in 3 to 5 years, that number is going to be plus 80%, probably closer to 90% of what they're doing is online. And I don't think we're going to have a choice. I think with the TRACE Act that came out, which impacts SMS, by the way, the ability for consumers today to block phone calls like never before. I forget sometimes even to check my voicemail. So I get that little notice on my phone that says your voicemail box is full. Then I'm like, ooh, geez. So there's this whole shift in the way that consumers want to communicate. And those companies that are right positioned to think completely differently, right? So probably most 80% of the revenue is coming through phone calls to agents. It'd probably be my guess if I had to throw it out there. And if you went the other way, you're going to have to flip that. Imagine what you're going to have to do internally to flip that number over to 80% is coming from online with a goal of being 90, 95, you know, 98, 99% all online self-serve. So Josh, you got a great point.
Yeah. So, yeah. And I, you know what, I think heading 25% is achievable in a short period of time. And even beyond that, for almost any agency, you mentioned something about not answering your phone. Again, another agency, I was on a call with them and their chief compliance officer. I hope they're on this so that they know I was listening when they were talking. I thought it was really interesting. They said that, well, how about all the people who look up our phone number online? How do we capture those people? And I was like, right there, so if you think about it, I hear a lot of this. People aren't answering their phone and they're not reading their mail. I mean, I'm a millennial, right? I definitely don't answer my phone, but I do look at my mail. And what I do when I don't answer my phone is, now iPhone, they transcribe my message. And if it's not all transcribed, maybe I'll put it on speakerphone, or maybe I'll just like hold it kind of far away and not pay attention, or I'll look up the phone number online. And so again, like I think looking at, I mean, very simple thing like that, if your outbound number is not on your website, it's on somebody else's. Mm-hmm. Maybe like Luxembourg or one of those other guys, right. And they're capturing those people actually looking for you. So, I mean, when it comes to like moving the needle, you don't need to move it 30% at once, but moving it 1% at a time, doing very simple things like that. I mean, it those things add up.
Yeah. I would go one step further. If you're not buying Google AdWords for your phone numbers, right? Somebody else is. And if you don't have good reviews about your organization and good content and those things out there that really help with that SEO, but at a minimum, you don't have to have any of that stuff. All you need is a credit card and a Google account, and you can start buying Google AdWords. You should be buying Google AdWords for your 800 numbers, those phone numbers that are heavily used, so people will find you first.
Yeah.
I will tell you this. I talked to a text company, couple weeks ago, and they go, if you were to turn on text messaging for your 800 number, you would be surprised at the number of text messages that are currently coming into your numbers that you're not even seeing. Because you have people that call you, right? And then they're on a smartphone and they can click on that phone number and it's going to pop up. Do you want to call them or send them a message? And there's a group of people out there that just say, I'll send them a message. And they send them a message and nothing happens ever. Because you're not seeing what those texts are. It's always interesting to me, especially with SMS, because we're going to keep coming back to that. It's where that industry is going, right? Inbound phone calls, nobody wants to miss an inbound phone call, ever. Why? It's money, right? It's the money calls. But we're looking to do, as an industry, we're looking to do text messaging as one way to drive inbound phone calls, or for us to drive an outbound phone call. So if inbound phone calls are money, inbound text messages are money. And so if you're going to do a text programming, you have to be ready for those inbound text messages. You have to be ready to say, I'm going to have to process cease and desist. I'm going to have to do disputes. I'm going to have, how do I get people to a payment portal? And Revenly has it set up that you can easily send over a hyperlink that you can put that back in the text message for them. And boom, it goes out to them and they can make their payment right on their phone, where all their credit card banking information is already captured, and all they have to do is push, I want to pay with, you know, Apple, my wallet. And that's how this seamless, frictionless payments are happening. So, but you have to be ready for that when you start doing the SMS. Because I think we got one of those questions about, you know, when you see these inbounds, what do you do with them? And I don't think you can ignore them. So,
It's an interesting point you raise about the toll-free number, because I wonder if the days of the toll-free number are going away, and B, if I put a number in a collection letter and someone opts to text it, is there a way to set it up so that I can receive texts on those numbers as well as calls if I'm a company?
Yeah, and I think the technology is there. You can. Now, I'm not an expert as it relates to text messaging, but we're learning a ton about it and doing more. But we do it at TrueAccord now, mainly for payment reminders and that kind of stuff, which is your safest bucket, right? It's what we talked about. But we're expanding our program there based upon client requirements. And so I think if we turn it on, we'd be surprised at the number of text messages you're getting. So, and I think you could do both. And I think you can even do it with an 800 number. And I think, to your point, Mike, about 800 numbers, they're coming back into fashion, because today I get calls. I have a 760 area code, which is North San Diego, right? Every time I see a 760 call come in, I know it's somebody who's telling me my social security number's been frozen. I've got, you know, some cheap life insurance I can get. They're trying to tell me it's timeshare. I don't ever answer a 760. So I think we're going to see that shift back to these 800 numbers where people can easily look them up. They're valid because there's an expense that's tied to them. So I think we'll start to see that shift back. So
maybe, and I guess the rollout of Shake and Stir should also help with that as well, I think.
That was actually really good thing. So I actually had to look it up real quick. So yeah, because I was like, I knew you could text these 800 numbers. So yes, you can. You can do send and receive from 800 numbers. And again, I know that physical letters in collections are pretty much frozen in time, very hard to change things. But Tim, could someone convert or get a 800 number and just put simply under that 800 number, text enabled?
Imagine if that happened, right? So what's going to happen? The consumer, maybe that's their main way of communicating. They're actually looking at your letter and it says text enabled. They could type it in and they could text you. And then you can do your consent capture program, right? So you can have an automated response that goes back out and says, hey, thank you for the text. You know, just want to confirm that we've got consent. And then just hit, you know, yes back, right? And then now look at that. That's a nice, nice way of capturing consent that now you can start to add and communicate with those people. If you think about it, phone call, while being most intrusive, is immediate. Phone rings, you have to answer. You don't have a choice. If you don't, you miss it. SMS, slightly less than that, slightly less intrusive, but you can answer a text message whenever you want. Most of us don't. As soon as a text message comes in, it could be whatever, and you want to take a look at it. But there's the ability to delay. Email is even further down in that bucket. Very, you know, extremely less intrusive. You can get to it whenever you want. It's never going to go away. And some of that stuff. And so I think, you know, that later bucket, but just that whole process of texting somebody back and they text you first. I mean, imagine going to court where they texted you first. Your Honor, they texted me first. They had the ability to hit stop at any time. So they clearly wanted to engage in this channel. That's why they did it. You're just going to have to be careful, Josh, because I think there's such a pent up desire for people to text collection agencies that you got to be ready for that, you know? So don't put it on all your letters and do it all right away, right? Let's ease into it. Put it on some letters and start to build out your program and your processes and your responses.
Well, yeah, there's the pendulum swings the other way. I think and this goes out to everybody. Yeah. When you start doing these things, think about all of the variables and how that, and what, where that, like, let's say a whole bunch of people start coming in, where that stress is going to be. And it's going to open up a whole bunch of new doors. And are you prepared for that? Again, there's the whole, like, can we text you? If an agent asks that, okay, great. Then what? Right? Like, what then? What do you actually expect that person to do? Where are you going to send them? So, putting on your letters without thinking about what to do next is probably not the... probably not a first step, I guess.
That's a problem now.
Yeah, and we got a question on that, right? So it says, do you recommend free form negotiations or form responses when agents are engaging with consumers? And I think I always prefer form responses. I like, you know, clients prefer it. They want to know what's going to be the written that's going to be sent over. So having that form response, but you're going to have to figure out what those form responses are. So as you build out your program, you're going to want to start off small. So if you're going to be texting outbound, don't outbound text 100,000 people on day one, right? Yep. Start off small, do some tests, see the responses you get back, write formed responses, you know, have a dedicated team that can answer those and respond back, create that form, document it, you know, in a policy, add it to a procedure, you know, put it into an SOP, standard operating procedure. So you have all and start to build out the program. That's how you do a successful digital launch. It's not just, hey, we're going to send out 100,000 text messages or 10,000 text messages. Let's test it and see what actually works and see what those responses are. So that's a great question. I still think you're not going to hit every scenario. So, and what you're going to find is every day you're going to get something new, and you're going to have to create a new response for that. So your legal and compliance group is going to want to be looking at all those responses. Hey, if you find something new, send it over, and we'll help you draft the response, and then you can get that out to the consumer. But if you send a text, the consumer is going to want a response back fairly quickly. So keep that piece in mind. It's not going to be, hey, text and don't respond ever. That's not a good, you know, UX user experience. So
what's the time frame? Like how quickly should somebody get back to a consumer if they do receive a text from them?
Yeah, it's a great question, Mike. It's one of the main, you know, numbers that agencies look at right now, which is how long is a consumer waiting online?
Sure.
Before they actually, you pick up a phone call. Two, what's your drops? And so I think it's going to be the same thing. It's going to be, how long is it taking you to respond back to those consumers? And, you know, actually the content to the communication itself. And so you're not going to have a drop because they're going to be there, but they may not be as responsive. They're engaging with you then, right now, right? And so they're looking for some sort of response. So the quicker you can give it back to them, the better. And I would say that under the FDCPA, obviously we have to do in between the hours of 8 a.m. and 9 p.m. But if a consumer is texting you at, you know, 10 p.m. and you're texting, you have the capability to text them right back because you have a call center someplace else, then that's almost like a real-time communication. You know, so that creates this different opportunity. Or you're going to have to at least text them back and say, look, at our office is closed right now. We'll respond back to you, you know, at our next available time between the hours of 8 a.m. and 9 p.m. But don't miss out on those inbound texts. Can't emphasize that enough.
If there are, if you're responding back with mostly form texts, is it possible to sort of set it up so that if I get a text at 9 o'clock, I can, you know, just sort of, you know, analyze it and have the, you know, and have my system send back the appropriate response? Or do you still think there needs to be a human to sort of choose which response to send back?
No, I think, I mean, this is the way True Accord is built. We're built on machine learning.
Right.
So very early on, we would get the emails that were coming in and they were drafting the responses, and machine learning has the ability to read that text and then, you know, with a level of certainty, which you can set, send back a response to that consumer. So very, very quickly, text messaging, as you start to build your data, should be machine learn driven. That company that I mentioned earlier, TCPA.ai, which is, you know, the adding the intelligence to the TCPA. That's why I love it. They built that. They went through 4 million inbound responses and analyzed that and then taught the machine to learn. So it just gets better and better and better. And I think the last time I looked at them, there's 13,000 ways to say stop, you know? And so I'm like, wow, I would have never thought. And some of it includes emojis, by the way. So they've actually figured out when somebody's sending over an emoji, that's a stop. So I think it's ripe for machine learning. And very quickly companies should have that, because what's the great thing about machine learning? Same response every time in that situation. Systematic, right? So it's going to be that systematic approach. You can put in, like we have at True Accord, we have a compliance checker between our machine learning that says, okay, you know, is this the right time? Is this the, what's the state restrictions? What's the client restrictions? All that stuff can be filtered. And then if it passes that sort of automated checklist, then the emails can go out. So I think Mike, in a very short period of time, it's machine learn driven.
All right. Our next question, and reminder, we've only got a few minutes left. So if you have a question for Josh or Tim, we're getting close to not having any time left. Our next question, how do you deal with the risk of third-party disclosure in email? For instance, in an email subject line, balancing being engaging versus risky.
So, oh, Tim, actually, you're the you are the expert. And I was just going to use an example I thought of when I read that, which is if your bank is emailing you saying you have a new monthly statement, they're usually not attaching it to that email. You have to go somewhere, log in to a secure place, and then download or view your statement. Right. So I know that's a very oversimplistic way, but Tim, you guys actually do it, so I'll let you expand.
Yeah, and I think we saw this with the CFPB, the new rule, the new proposed rule. They talked about email. They talked about potentially some, you know, subject lines and putting things inside the body of the email itself. And I will tell you, you know, and anybody can go out and take a look at the lawsuits. It's public record against TrueAccord. We're sending 20 million emails a month. I think in the 2.5 years I've been here, I've seen one third-party disclosure. And that was a case where it was a less scrupulous attorney, and the case ended up being dismissed without a settlement of any kind. But consumers want to be engaged via email, right? That's the channel that they want to use. And that's that's how they signed up for the credit account. That's how they've been communicated the whole time with their account. Now it comes over to the consumer, you know, now it comes over to debt collection. The only thing that's changed is debt collection. You know, Gmail, you still have to, you know, most people have a password on their phone. So third-party disclosure is going to be pretty limited in that case. And there's some litigation things that you can do that I know that some of the lawyers that are on here are already thinking about. It's like, how do we cut off these lawsuits before they get very far? But I'm not worried about third-party disclosures. That's a long way to be able to say that. Your number one issue with email is deliverability. And to Josh's point, if you're attaching something to an email, you're going into spam. So you don't have to worry about it. That's how the big players now look at attachments. They're just too risky, and they just drop them all into spam. So if your email program is attachment-driven, your deliverability is not going to be there at all. So
if not attachments, is it links then? Links are probably just, you know, not viewed just as cautiously as attachments. So how do you, you know, if you need to sort of send somebody something, how do you do it and not end up in spam?
Go ahead, Josh.
I'd say using a good email provider. Again, if you were to open up Gmail and just copy paste a bunch of emails in, you are eventually going to be, there are email providers who offer the service of email. And if you start abusing it, they're going to kick you out. They're going to fire you as a client. So to really not go into, there is best practices. And again, obviously TrueAccord uses them all, those, because that's where they run their business on. But there are best practices when emailing and texting to not get in order to inbox.
Yeah, and I think that's email deliverability, and Josh said it perfectly. It's going to be, I think the best thing you can do is make it as frictionless as possible. We put the 1692G, the validation notice, is in that first email, right? It's right there, kind of looks like a letter, laid out like a letter. It has links in it. Every email we send has the ability to opt out. Every email we send has our ability to dispute. Every email we send has privacy, and those are all links. And then you've got your disclosures and everything else that go in there, but put it in the email. Consumers can read. And if they want to click on a link, they'll click on a link. But what they'll do, Mike, to answer your question, is they're going to go out and search on TrueAccord, you know, in Google and say, who is this? You know, right. Should I really care about them? And that's really where your search engine optimization is really going to come into play. So you look like a valid company, you act like a valid company, you get that response, and it just becomes self-feeding after that. That's the beauty of the internet.
Makes sense. I think we've got time for one more question. We talked about the different buckets, I guess, with respect to text messaging. And here's a question about where disputes fit in. How do you handle disputes via text, especially in situations in which documents are requested?
Yeah, so I break disputes down into two buckets, right? So you have some within the first 30 days, validation, that's your higher risk piece. Depends upon how your system's set up and kind of what that consumer preference is. So let's assume most agencies, you get a dispute that comes in and you have to validate that debt. You're going to send it out in your current process, which is just using the mail, right? If you can drive the consumer, if you can create a response where you can drive the consumer to a web portal, like they can get it that way, that's another option. There's some risks that go along with that. If you can send it out with the email, there's a way to send out documents now. There's a company out there called SendRight that's sending out JPEGs of the initial notice. So there's ways you can deliver it to them. But really, currently, your process is going to be to mail it out. And you're going to do the standard there. Outside that validation period, some companies still split those out. TrueAccord doesn't. We treat them all the same. A dispute is a dispute. You could send back sort of that validating, that verification, if you will, information. Potentially in the text is one of the options that's out there. So it's just something you have to think about, and it comes down to risk appetites, what we've been talking about most of the day.
Got it. Well, we've just about wrapped up and run out of time, but before we let Tim and Josh go, I want to give them the chance to share any parting words of wisdom, any key takeaways, anything they didn't get a chance to address, but didn't get a chance to. Just a chance to sort of summarize their remarks. Tim, would you mind going first?
I'd be honored. Thank you so much. And Mike, thank you for this opportunity as always. Josh and Revenly, thank you for doing this series. It's a thought leadership in this space about how we have to digitize. And I know this is the sixth and final one. I hope you continue them, but I can't thank you enough for this opportunity. I would say one of my biggest takeaways here is you don't have to do it alone. And in a vacuum, right? And a lot of people are thinking about text messaging, and there's a lot of companies that are out there. I would recommend talking to those companies, figuring out what your risk appetite is internally first, and you know, developing what your needs are that you're trying to accomplish, and go find somebody that can help you do that. I wouldn't build it from scratch. You know, that's even harder to do. So it's going to be difficult enough to digitize. Find the right vendor, unless it's core to you and it's your secret sauce and this is it, then you build it. Otherwise, everything else, you should be using those vendors out there that's their core business and that's what they do really, really well. So that would be my highest recommendation there. But thank you again, gentlemen.
Good advice. Josh?
Thank you, Tim. Great minds think alike. I'm not even kidding. You took pretty much what I was going to say. I was going to recommend looking inside and outside of this industry at other industries, other companies. I know this is a compliant driven industry, but still looking at other vendors and other companies alike and talking to them about how to set up some of these things. You know, there's experts in every field. Don't feel like you have to do it alone and use your resources, and also just have an internal person who, like, again, it owns that process and does that research. Obviously, don't go buy the first thing off the shelf that you see, but there are a lot of options out there, and you know, there's a lot of people to talk to who do know what they're doing, and I heavily recommend talking to as many as you can.
Good advice, Josh. Tim, thank you so much. You know, for my first video webinar, I couldn't have asked for two better panelists talking about a more important topic, and you guys knocked it out of the park. Excellent job. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, everybody. Thanks for watching or participating today. Thanks for your questions. A recording of this event will be posted to the webinar recordings page of accountrecovery.net in the next day or so, and I hope everybody stays tuned to accountrecovery.net for more news and webinars in the very near future. Thanks, everybody. Take care.
Thanks, everyone.